congregation who signed up for our next Count Me In project, which is October 20th. And I wanted to mention it because I put out another sheet there, and it would be great if we could fill up another sheet of people who are ready to help with the elderly and those in need. And that will be happening on October 20th. It's going to be a great opportunity. So if you didn't get a chance to sign up for it last week, then please visit that back table this morning on your way out and take a look at it and sign up. We've got lots of projects already coming in, people who have need. We're going to do just light yard work type stuff and painting and that kind of thing. So that's for you at the back there. So if you're using the Bible that we have, it's page 457 is where you'll find this proverb, 24, verse 10. And the one that we're looking at for today is a bit harsh, and maybe you could even take it as kind of insensitive, the way that this proverb reads. It says, "If you falter in times of trouble, how small is your strength?" Or maybe you could read it a different way. You say, "If you falter in times of trouble, you know, how small is your strength? A wimp?" I mean, it kind of has this strong sense to it. It sounds like a coach or you know, somebody who's sort of almost trash talking if you read it in that way. It kind of calls us out like a coach does and says, you know, "Where's your strength?" This is a good thing, though. We need a little bit of this in our lives, every single one of us. Now, we all know the kind of a coach who overdoes it. And there's a coach in the NBA, he's a college coach who's known for throwing chairs across the court when he gets angry, and they accused him of strangling a guy one time or hitting some of his. I mean, he definitely takes it overboard. I looked him up on YouTube. I thought I could get a good quote from him to give you an example of a coach who sort of overdoes it, but there was nothing suitable for a worship service that he said, and so I didn't do that. So we've all had that experience. If you've been in athletics or maybe in music or something like that, you've probably experienced somebody like that in your life who's been overbearing and overdone it and ends up having a destructive sort of influence in your lives. But then there's the other kind of coach, the coach that's good and right and who calls you to a higher level. Calls you up to say, "This is how you need to be. This is who you need to become. I know you can do it." And that's the spirit in which we read this proverb that we're looking at this morning. It's kind of the coach saying, "Come on, let me call you to the next level. Let me call you to something higher and better than what you've been living to this time." And what he's really saying here, the writer of the proverb is saying, "Find your strength. Come on, find your strength." And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. How is it that we, as followers of Jesus Christ, find our strength? And we're going to see that as we look through this, it's a little bit different than what you might expect. There's a little bit kind of a backwards approach to finding our strength in Christ. But first of all, I want to talk about this verse and the problem that this verse raises in our lives. The word in here that's translated falter means just that, to falter or to be disheartened or to be discouraged. It talks about how a person responds to a difficult circumstance. So if you find yourself in trouble, how do you react to that trouble? That's what it's getting at. And it includes, in its meaning, sort of the sense of what does your body do? How does your body respond? You know, are you dejected? Is your face down? Are you forlorn? That kind of a thing. In the use of this word, you see that often. It's used in the Bible. People falter. They are discouraged, etc., when they're brought disturbing news. In 2 Samuel 4:1, we see that somebody's brought news of somebody else's death, and the person who received it is faltering. They're discouraged. When false allegations are labeled against somebody else, in the book of Nehemiah, we find that they're building the wall, and then the people surrounding Jerusalem don't want them to build the wall, and so they come and they accuse them of these things, and the whole idea is to get them to stop building the wall, to discourage them, to get them to become faint-hearted, to falter in the work that they're engaging in. There is, this word is used at the thought of God's powerful coming at the end of all time. When God returns in his power and his strength and he sort of folds up this tent that this world is and prepares to open a new one, that is a fear-inducing kind of an event. The Bible says, and people falter, they lose strength at the thought of that and the power of it. Happens when people don't receive enough encouragement. In 2 Chronicles, the word is used for somebody who doesn't receive encouragement, and so they falter, they're discouraged, they lack. And it's often connected with hands in the phrase, "hands went limp." So you know that sense of when, you know, something really just you know, kind of overwhelming is approaching, and your strength kind of recedes, and your hands go limp. That's what the idea is here that it's talking about. One verse says, at the sound of the hooves of galloping steeds, at the noise of enemy chariots, and the rumble of their wheels, you know, the people's hands will go limp. Some of us can relate to this. Now, some of us are prone to discouragement, and something happens in life, something minimally even difficult, and we sense that discouragement comes upon us. Our hands go limp, and our knees start to knock. And for many of us, even, this kind of approach can become a habit. You know, whenever something bad happens, our immediate response is discouragement. Oh, we kind of do this, hands go limp, and we practice this almost. And it almost becomes a way of life. And so this message is really important for us to maybe break that habit. Now, for some of us, we need the message for a different reason, because we are facing something that is so overwhelming and so incredibly fear-inducing that it would make anybody shake in their boots. And for those of us in that circumstance, we also need to hear this message, because we need to have strength going into the midst of this terrible thing. And I want to say something that's very important here. As we talk about this and we kind of approach this from the coaching perspective, you know, step up, you know, find your strength, be strong in the midst of your circumstances. I don't mean to imply by that there isn't a place in life for grief and for sorrow and for, you know, prayer and working through venting that sorrow. The Bible talks about those things as well, and they're very important. They're a part of what it means to be human. But what we're going to focus on this morning is that whole idea of strength and finding your strength. So that's really what this verse raises in terms of the problem that we as human beings face as people who don't always have the strength that we might need. Now, I want to talk a little bit about the vision for what it means to be a Christian, to live like a Christian, to grow as a Christian, to live as a follower of Christ. What is the vision for us in relation to strength? What kind of people are we to be? And it's very clear in Scripture, all throughout, that Christians are to be ultimately strong people. Now, that sounds a little strange to you, maybe, but I'm going to unpack that as we go. In the end, when all is said and done, the examples in Scripture of people who are following the Lord are examples of people who are strong. There's so many that I could hardly begin to do justice to them all, but I wanted to pull out two examples that I think will illustrate the point that we're trying to get at here this morning. Both of these examples involve a boat and a storm, and both of them involve people who are trying to follow Christ. Some are at the very beginning stages of following Christ. They're sort of green baby disciples. And then the other one is a mature follower of Christ who's been walking with the Lord for a long time and gives us a kind of a different example of what it means to be strong in the midst of difficult circumstances. So the first one, Storm 1, we're going to call it, is found in Matthew 8, 23 through 27. And you don't need to turn there at this moment. I'll kind of explain it to you. The disciples, Jesus has finished talking. The disciples get into a boat with Jesus, and they set out on the Sea of Galilee, and a storm kicks up, and it gets bigger and bigger, and the waves are, the wind is blowing harder and harder, and the waves are rising higher and higher, and the disciples are getting more and more panicked at the plight that they're in, and Jesus is with them in the boat, and he's just sleeping in the back of the boat, oblivious seemingly to what's going on. And the level of panic rises, so they run to Jesus, and they wake up, and they say, "Don't you see what's going on? Aren't you going to save us?" And Jesus wakes up, and he stands up, and he calms the storm with a word, and then he turns to these disciples, and he says, "Where is your faith? Where is your faith? Why are you panicking in the midst of this difficulty?" Their knees knocked. They essentially exhibited this little word falter that we're talking about. It's a perfect picture of what it means to falter in the face of difficulty. Now, Storm 2 happens later on in the New Testament. This is a story about the Apostle Paul. It's the very end of the book of Acts in chapter 27. Paul is on his way to Rome under guard because he is a prisoner. He's been captured. And he's been being taken to Rome. And he's on a boat with 275 other people, and they set out across the Mediterranean Sea, and it says that a northeastern wind comes with hurricane force and starts to blow the boat back and forth. And everybody starts to panic on this boat. And they take and they pull the lifeboat up on top because the lifeboat can't make it anymore, being dragged behind them. And then they throw ropes around the hull because they're afraid that the boat is going to break up. And they pull the ropes and cinch them tight to hold the boat together. And the storm continues to blow, and they start throwing all of the supplies overboard. And then in the morning, they're still so panicked because it's not getting any better that they start to throw even the tackle overboard, the things that they need just even to sail the boat, the absolute essentials. It's gotten so bad, and they're so panicked that they're throwing the tackle overboard. And in the midst of this chaos and this panic, and these sailors and the soldiers and the people, passengers on the boat are all panicking, Paul stands up and he says to them, starting in verse 21, he says to them, men, you should have taken my advice, first of all, not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and loss. But now I urge you to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost, only the ship will be destroyed. Last night, an angel of the God whose I am and whom I serve stood beside me and said, do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar, and God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you. So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me. Nevertheless, he adds, we must run aground on some island. And in fact, they do. But in the midst of it, he continues to strengthen and encourage them, and all 276 of the people on that boat are saved by the end, in large part because Paul stood up and he had courage and kept them from panicking, from making the wrong decisions. Now, those are the two pictures of what our responses can be. Storm one, faltering, and storm two, courage and strength. And the Bible calls us, and Christ calls us, to grow into people who face difficulty like we saw in storm two, with strength and with courage. In fact, there are so many examples, as I said, you couldn't look at them all, but I wanted to pull out one other one from the book of Hebrews in chapter 11, verse 32 through 38. The writer of Hebrews is talking about all the amazing things that God has done through his followers and the things that they've endured, and he sort of reaches a fevered pitch at the end. He says, what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword. Listen to this. Whose weakness was turned to strength. We're going to talk about how that happens in the next part. Whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others were tortured and refused to be released so they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and in holes in the ground. And the picture that we're given there is of a group of people, a kind of people, a character of people who are strong in the face of difficulty and persecution and challenge and circumstances that would induce faltering and weakness. Now, that's the vision of who we're to become. We can't lose sight of that. If we're followers of Christ, if we decide to take on the adventure of following Christ, we are moving towards becoming people of strength. People who are able to face those kinds of circumstances. It's just the way it is. Whether we even like it or not, God is at work in our lives to make us so. That's the vision we got to have. That's where we're headed. The question then becomes, well, how do we move in that direction? How do we get there? How do we become people of strength? Well, here's the strategy, and it's a little bit different than you might think. And it's rooted again, interestingly, in the same word, falter. Actually, when you look at all the uses of this word falter, there's a kind of a relational component to it. when it's used with another person as the object, what it means is let go or leave or abandon or desert or forsake. So that in the phrase like this, which God says many times, I will never leave you or forsake you, it's the same word as we read in the proverb. God says this many times in Scripture, Joshua 1:5, Deuteronomy 31:6 and 8, 1 Chronicles 28:20, Hebrews 13:5, I will never leave you. That's the word leave you. I will never leave you or forsake you. And it turns out that that's the key to finding our strength. Our strength is rooted in the fact that God never leaves us or forsakes us. He never falters. And it's so interesting when you think of that and look back at Paul in the boat, you see exactly that happening. Now, Paul was seems to me a strong person just naturally. But it's not his natural strength that he depends on in that boat to encourage and fortify the rest of the people on that boat. It's something different. It's something about the God that he belongs to and the promise of that God in his life. Now, here's the tricky thing about this. We access the strength of God through our weakness. We access the strength of God through our weakness. Jesus said, blessed are the poor in spirit, and blessed are the meek. Paul said, 2 Corinthians 12:10, talking about this thorn that's been bothering him, making him weak. He says, that is why for Christ's sake I delight in weaknesses. I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, I am strong, Paul says. When I am weak, I am strong. In fact, the verse right before that, he says, but the Lord said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses so that Christ's power may rest on me. If you want God's power, the key is coming to grips with your own weakness. And when God created people, you know, he made some amazing people. We're, you know, on one level, it is amazing to look at humans and the strength that we have in relation to our environment, the things that in our own power we can accomplish and do. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. But there is a quality of strength, a kind of strength, that is on a whole other level than human strength. There's a whole other magnitude than human strength. Paul gets at it when he says this beautifully. He says, the weakness of God is stronger than man's strength. Or you take the strongest human strength of all, and you put it next to the weakness of God, and it doesn't hold a candle. Because the weakness of God is stronger than the strength of human beings. And we have the opportunity to tap into, to exchange the human kind of a strength for the divine kind of a strength. And that transfer takes place, that exchange of the one for the other takes place when we recognize our limitations. Even those of us who are relatively strong in relation to the people around us, when we recognize our limitations, every single one of us is headed inexorably towards death. And we can't help it. We're weak in the face of it. When we understand our limitations, and then we begin to settle our hearts to depend on the Lord for our strength, the exchange occurs. A few weekends ago, we were at the Russian River Labor Day. And we were celebrating my wife's parents' anniversary. Do you want me to tell them which one that was? Or that was the weekend when Justin McRoberts was here, and we were having a great time as a family at the Russian River. And we were floating on the Russian River on Saturday, kayaking up the river, and it was a search for a rope swing, really, is what it was, because the boys, the cousins, wanted to find a rope swing. And we found a rope swing, and, you know, it was a great swing. We climbed up, we got on it, and it sort of swung out about 20, maybe 25 feet high, and then dropped you off into the river. It was great. And we started doing it. It was really fun. And there was this branch that came out over the river, and it sort of came right by where sort of the pinnacle of the swing was. So right when you jumped off, you were close to this branch that was just sort of coming out across the river like that. And my brother-in-law was looking at this branch, and he said, you know, wouldn't it be interesting if you could swing out on the rope and let go of the rope and hang onto the branch? And I thought, you know, yes, in a sort of philosophical, theoretical way, that would be an interesting concept to explore. And we began to talk about this a little bit more, and I realized that he wasn't talking about it philosophically and theoretically. He was talking about it really and truly. And we began to talk about how, in fact, you would make such a move from the end of the rope to the branch. And we decided this one thing was certain. When you made the leap and your hand touched the branch, you would need to grasp onto that with all your might, because all of a sudden, your entire being would be hanging by your left hand. Now, if you're, you know, it's so funny. When you're a kid, you don't even think about stuff like that. You have the same ideas, but you just go, I'm going to go do it. When you're grown-ups and you're men, you have the same ideas, but then you have to analyze it and think through exactly how you're going to do this. And that's what we did. But we were right. You know, you'd have to really grasp onto that branch. In fact, before we left, there was a guy who tried it, and he got halfway between, and he grasped the branch, but he didn't really grasp it hard enough, and it slipped out of his hand. He was still hanging onto the rope. He started to go backwards towards the shallow part of the river, and then finally let go of the rope and sort of splashed down on his side, luckily in a part that was deep enough, but he came up a little bit stunned. And so that's what would happen, you know, if you didn't grab the two. So shortly after we were having this discussion, somebody came up who was obviously a local, and my brother-in-law said, hey, is it possible to grab the branch, you know, when you're up at the top? And he said, oh, yeah, I do it all the time. Zoop, he did it. Boom, latched onto the branch. So then, of course, my brother-in-law goes, you know, he said, well, I'm just going to see what happens. He goes up, boom, boom, latches onto the branch, climbs up on the branch, jumps off the branch, no problem. Now, I had tried a flip just previous to this and totally botched it, landed on my belly, and so I was still trembling from that, and I thought, well, but you know, you cannot try, right? So I go out, and I'm nervous. I thought, well, I'll just see what happens. And I got up to the top, to the sort of the highest point, and there was the branch. It's like right there. It wasn't hard at all. I remembered what we said. When you do it, grasp hard and let go of the rope. And so I did it, and I hung there, and I made it, climbed around the branch, jumped off. Now, why am I telling you this story? Because this is exactly what needs to take place when we move from the human kind of the strength to the divine kind of the strength. There's an exchange that needs to take place. We're holding onto the rope of our human strength, and we need to let go of it. You can't hold on to both. And when you reach out for the strength of God, for the divine kind of a strength, you grasp on with everything that you have, and you don't let go. You commit fully to the branch, because the branch is solid and strong and will hold you up. A lot of times what happens, I think, for those of us who are trying to follow Christ, is that we get in kind of an awkward position. We study and we read the Bible, and we start to get this point that, yeah, we're supposed to be weak. We're supposed to be familiar with our weakness, that we're not strong, and have a healthy sense of who we are before an awesome God. And we develop that sense of our weakness, but then we fail to make the exchange and the transfer to the place of strength and dependency upon God. And what we're left with then is a person who knows a lot about their weakness, but has no hope of strength. And the Bible is calling us to be real about your own weakness, but don't stop there. Don't stay there. Reach out for the branch that is strong, that is the Lord, and grasp on with everything you have. Hold on tight and know the strength that is divine. I mean, how do you make that transfer? We've already said it. We need to keep that vision that ultimately, while we're to be familiar with our weakness, we are not to be weak in the end. We're to be strong because of the Lord. That's the vision. Secondly, we need to be familiar with our own weakness. We need to know where we're weak and be comfortable talking about it. In fact, Paul said, I boast about my weakness. I boast about my weaknesses. Because when I'm weak, then I'm strong. And then thirdly, we need to just simply trust that branch. And I honestly, this is the hardest part for me. You know, I can be clear about my weaknesses. And I know theoretically that I'm supposed to be a strong person. But it's trusting that branch, depending on the strength that's there, day in and day out, that is the challenge oftentimes. I'm going to finish with just a little illustration of this. And this is the most mundane, boring example that you have ever heard in your life. Okay? But you know what? Sometimes it's in the very small things that we start to change our habits and the way we think about things. And if I gave you some, you know, example of somebody who conquered worlds and did all this stuff, you'd say, well, that's not me. I can't connect with that. Here's my lame little example. On Wednesday, I was on a personal retreat and getting ready for this next Sunday. Next Sunday, just to remind you all, is our vision day for the year. Everybody come. We're going to talk about our vision, and we're going to also have a little meeting afterwards. Very important. Saturday, we're going to be in fasting and prayer, just asking God to direct us and lead us. So I was on a retreat to try and begin to put together my thoughts on this for next Sunday. And I just gave my money for my room and was on my way, and the woman who was at the counter said, have a great day. And I said to her, I will. I will. Now, I could say that in three different ways. I could say, I will, because I'm going to make it a great day in my own strength, right? I could say, I will, because I'm a wishful thinker, and I'm hoping that I actually will have a great day. Or I could say, I will, because I have this confidence that God is with me. Just like Paul said on that boat. The God I belong to is here. And I will have a great day, not because of wishful thinking, not because of my own strength, but because the Lord is with me. Now, I was so tickled after I said I will. Because deep down in my heart, I knew and recognized that it was that third category out of which that statement came. Once in a while, it happens. You know, it goes well. That's the kind of habit that Christ is bringing us to. It's a gut response to difficulty and challenge, to problems and storms and hurricanes and big winds and losses and failures and all of that. Is to say, it'll be okay. And not wishful thinking, not because I'm good, but because the Lord is my strength. And he has said numerous times, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. We're going to share communion this morning. And maybe there's an